Tuesday, July 5. This is the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you if you're just tuning in. And Nick Kyrgios is through to his third Grand Slam quarterfinal and his first since the Australian Open of 2015 after a five-set victory against American Brandon Nakashima overnight. Also through to the last eight in the women's, Alia Tomjanovic. She beat Elise Cornet, the French woman, in three sets after the Aussie dropped the first set. Unfortunately, Alex Demonor, had two match points against Christian Garin, the Chilean, but lost in the fifth set. It went to a super tiebreaker. He lost that 10-6. And Jason Kubler lost in straight sets to Taylor Fritz, the American 11th seed. So Kyrgios and Tomjanovic will be cheering on there in the last eight at Wimbledon. In the cricket overnight, England are powering towards what would be a famous triumph, and they won this because they've been set 378 for victory after they rolled India for 245 in their second dig. Ben Stokes, four wickets, four for 33 off nearly 12 overs. And in response, England, chasing that target of nearly 400, well, there were a century opening stand between Alex Lees and Zach Crawley. Then they lost three for two to be three for 109. That brought Joe Root and Johnny Bairstow together, Clarkie, and they've put on 150 unbeaten. And England are three for 259 at stump. So Ben Stokes to come, I think I'm in England's camp here if I was having a bet at the moment.
Yeah.
Takes one ball, though, or two balls.
What a performance. I actually think that's, if I'm India, I'm thinking that. And you see it so often. You get to day five and the team batting, you think, geez, they're home here, they should win. You go bang, bang, and it's game over. Wicket, it'd be deteriorating, be hard to start your innings. But in saying that, you got England's two best players at the moment, certainly this year, are at the crease at the moment. Johnny Bairstow's making runs for fun. 500s in a calendar year, I think, I saw the other day. And Joe Root's, at this stage, the last probably 2 years, has been the number one test batsman in the world. So if anyone's going to get you home, it's these two. And then you got Stokesy, who he does know how to win a game. He's done it so many times. He's been there at the end and got his team home. So, yeah, it will be one of England's all-time wins if they do get over the line. But the way they're playing, the confidence they've got, I reckon they'll get them. I reckon England will get the runs.
Oh, I've just had a look at the live betting with Tab. England shorter than I thought, actually. They're $1.16. India, $5. The draw, $101.
How many overs have India bowled at this stage that ball?
57 overs. So they're going along at a clip, England, 4.54. So they're a fair way from the second new ball.
That's
still
why, because they're going at that pace. That's where India's under pressure. India are probably thinking, right, the ball's obviously not swinging now. They've got to find a way to restrict runs, try and pick up one or two wickets before that second new ball, and then go through the tail with the second new ball. So, it's going to be a cracking finish, that's for sure.
Yep, that's later tonight there at Edgbaston. Loz, Jack Whiten, 18th man. Crichton and Burton remain in the centres for New South Wales. The bench unchanged. Payne Haas out with a shoulder injury, replaced by Jordan McLean in the starting side. No Regan Campbell-Gillard again. And Billy Slattery has just made that one force change after the 44-12 defeat in Perth. Tom Gilbert, the 21-year-old from the Cowboys, who's Dolphins-bound next year, he comes in for Felice Kaufusi, who's out due to family reasons. So Jeremiah Nenai will start.
Yeah, the Cowboys are getting rewarded for their strong start to the season. But I don't think too many people thought they'd be sitting in third position at this stage of the season. A lot of their players, both through through Queensland and with Jordan McLean now being added to the New South Wales side, they've got a massive representation, and it's congratulations to them. They all thoroughly deserved their positions in the squad. The big talking points, though, for New South Wales was obviously McLean coming in at the expense of, well, not the expense of, but with Payne Haas missing out, but New South Wales overlooking Regan Campbell-Gillard after game one. Most people thought that he may have been back into that team, but I think he's paying a price for Parramatta's inconsistent performances. And then Jack, who was the best player for New South Wales in game one, missed out through COVID in game two. They didn't want to change that winning combination. I agree with New South Wales in this regard, that Jack either had to be in the side or didn't make it at all. If you're carrying Damien Cook on the interchange bench as your 14th player. I think they would have left themselves open there for criticism, and also left themselves open if New South Wales got an early injury to one of their forwards or concussion played a part early in the game and you had to move a Jack Whiten into the back row. I think that could have disrupted them because Jack's not used to playing in the middle. I know that Talakai is a centre, but he's played there as a kid. He spent a bit of time there at the start of the season as a middle and also an edge forward. So he'll handle it a bit better than Jack. But unfortunately, you know, Stephen Crichton would have been the one that I would have left out. I think, you know, he's a wonderful player. He's got a great combination with those other Penrith players. But I would have found a position for Jack to start the game. But, you know, Freddie's been courageous in every decision that he's made. And it's like anyone, you're judged once the game is over on Wednesday night. But this is still a strong New South Wales team. And going up there to Queensland, a decider, always difficult to beat. But I don't know, this Queensland side, I think this squad here in Game 3 is probably their weakest one of the three that they've had. A few of the young guys, I think, were exposed in Origin 2. You think they'll be a bit better for it and being up there in Queensland. But if New South Wales can apply the same pressure, I think they get the same mistakes from some of these young Queenslanders because it's a furnace origin. It's played at a faster tempo. And when you're not used to it, it takes you a few games to get used to the speed and intensity of the game.
Coming up, well, Clarkey Gutho is 6 foot two. So what does he get?
He's not 6 foot two.
Gutho's a pretty good looking rooster, though.
So yeah, he's 6 foot two. What does he get out of 10?
Gutho's probably a seven.
You're giving him a seven.
He's a seven, but he plays footy at the highest level. He's probably an eight, Gutho.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He's a good looking rooster, Gutho.
Yeah, and he's captain, so that's another half point.
He's skipper, eight and a half.
Yeah, eight and a half.
Eight and a half. What else? Yeah. I don't want to know anymore. It's enough. Eight and a half. Leave it there.
Gutho's next. Wow. Clarkie's just treating you objectively here, Gutho.
Eight and a half, Gutho. You take that or what?
Rate yourself out of 10, Gutho.
I was thinking of seven when I looked in the mirror this morning.
Yeah, there you go. So eight and a half. You're taking that.
Well, hang on. What's the hair doing today? That's got to be a factor.
It's a little bit different today. He's got a bit of water in at the moment, so it's looking nice.
Good stuff. So you've flown up with the Blues last night, Gutho. Is that right, after sitting on the tarmac for an hour and a half?
Yeah, we got here eventually. We landed about 10:30, so a little bit later than we thought, but we got here and just happy to be in camp. We'll train today and start preparations, and then I'll head back to Sydney, I think, on Thursday to play on Saturday and then come back into camp to help prep for Wednesday.
Okay, so you're back into camp straight after the game against the Tigers this week. But just on the club scene, so 30-12, the loss to Souths. What was the catalyst, do you think, for that result last weekend?
Oh, yeah, it was disappointing. We really clawed our way back just before half-time, and we just gave them too much easy ball. You can't give a team like Souths easy ball, and I think we made 12 errors out of our half, and It's just a sort of win when you take that much ball. And look, it's disappointing, but again, we've got to fight back this week and we've got a big game on Saturday, so looking forward to that.
Gutho, I'm not prepared to write the Eels off. And a lot of people, you know, have been commenting this week, in particular after you've been beaten by South, so they just can't win the comp. You know, they've never been able to do it the last couple of years. I'm not one of those. I'm a believer, but I'm starting to get doubts because, you know, we speak about it most weeks, what's letting the Parramatta side down, yet we still can't get a fix for it. When does the fix happen and are you confident it can happen and you can turn your season around?
Yeah, it has to come soon. It's obviously very disappointing, the ups and downs that we're having at the moment, but we've got full confidence that we can fix it, and there's still nine rounds to go and we're still in the top eight. We just got to find that balance where we're going wrong, but at the moment it's not working, and we are an inconsistent team. But to be able to fix it's up to us, and That's what we need to do.
Gutho, do you do anything different? Because, again, it's not the first time we've had this conversation. Do you feel like after you lose a game that there is expectation that you should win or you should certainly play better? What has changed? So, you know, if you go back to Tigers, losing to the Tigers versus losing on the weekend, is the conversation in the change room different? Is training, the following week different? Or do you feel like you're still doing very similar things?
No, we're doing everything the same during the week. We prepare really well. We do everything right, and we're just on the game day. We're just a totally different team at the moment. And I've said it for probably the last couple of months. It's very inconsistent, and it's not fun to be a part of at the moment. We have a great game, and then we have a really bad game. But still 9 rounds to go, and look, we have to fix it pretty quickly. Otherwise, you can't go into the finals. Win one, lose one, because you're out straight away. So we've got a bit of room to improve, and the boys will do their review today, and all focus towards the Tigers.
Is it a confidence thing, Gutho? Do you look too hard in what's going on, and do you overanalyze, or because you can't fluke beating Melbourne, and you can't fluke beating Penrith. That's why I don't give up on Parramatta. I see them as a challenger, and I see it in them. But when I see them lose to the Bulldogs and the Tigers, I just shake my head and go, "Wow, what's the issue here? Why can't they get that? Why can't they get that consistency?"
Yeah, it's frustrating. Obviously, as I said, we prepare really well all week and come to the game with a game plan, and things sort of just don't go our way, and the game just doesn't go the result we wanted. But look, it's something we need to fix. As I said, it's very frustrating. As you just said, we can beat the best teams and play our best games against the best teams, but when it gets to the next week, 2 weeks on, we can't be able to back it up. And Penrith, the best team at the moment, they're able to do it every single week, and we can't do that at the moment.
Gutho, have you spoken to Regan Campbell-Gillard, and does he have an understanding as to why he wasn't picked again for Game 3?
No, I haven't spoke to Reg. He's a pretty easygoing guy, and I'm sure Fred probably would have gave him a call and said we're going this way. But obviously, as a teammate of Reg and as a mate, you'd love to see him in here. But that's the way the team and the coaching staff wanted to go. And look, he'll move on and want to put in a good performance this week. And look, Jordan's been around the game for a long time, and he'll go out and explain that Wednesday and do his job as well. But obviously disappointed for Reg, but he'll go out on Saturday and do the point to prove.
What were the coaching staff like after Origin 2, and what was their feedback for the side, Gutho? Because it was pretty impressive that second half over there in Perth.
Yeah, all the chat was just on what we did all week. We really focused on us and getting back to what we needed to do. But straight away after that win, it doesn't mean anything unless we win Game 3. So we really focused on Game 3. We've got a very similar squad to Game 2, and sort of preparation starts today.
I'm sure you'll love getting to Leichhardt Oval, though, on Saturday night, Gutho, against Clarkie's Tigers. And I'm sure no greater motivation than the fact they beat you earlier in the season, of course.
Yeah, exactly. We're really looking forward to it. And after a poor performance, we have to go out there and make sure we win. But they're going to be thinking the same. So massive challenge for us to be able to come back off a poor performance. And no harder challenge than Leichhardt Tigers on a Saturday night.
Just looking at the weather forecast to see whether it'll snow. Get any Surely better. Snow. Tell us about what it was like playing in those conditions last week.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'd never played it at sort of crazy weather in my NRL career. And you sort of play the ball on halfway in that second half, and the ball would just go into the ground and then not roll anywhere. But look, it's just disappointing the way we performed, and I think it's going to be very similar this week.
Gutho, tell us about, do you feel any difference when someone like Luttrell is in that South team? Again, I think South are another side. We've seen some inconsistent performances, yet they walk out in the way they played. And we probably haven't given them enough credit. We've been hard on Parra, but I think the way South played, you know, they come out, they just look like a really different team with Luttrell on the park. Do you feel that as an opposition team?
Yeah, definitely. He's obviously a quality player, and he's played at the highest level. But I think just having him back on the field gave them a lot of confidence. Yeah. And some of the footy they played in that weather was, look, credit to them. They really threw the ball around and tested us. And, look, just the confidence that he probably brings to a lot of those players, like Cody Walker, Damien Cook, just to be able to play the footy that they probably have over the last couple of years was great for them, but obviously not so good for us. Mm-hmm. But just to see him back and playing was great for the game.
Gutho, I just want to get your thoughts, because there's been a lot of talk this week after the weekend's games about the six of game calls, in particular when sides are defending their try line. Do you actually like that rule? Would you prefer? Do you just see it as something that's here to stay? Would you like it to maybe revert back to penalties, or are you happy to leave it into the discretion of the referees? Where are you? Do you stand on it?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because I think the game over the last couple of years has really sort of been flowing really well, but there's obviously those times at the back end of games where it's tight and teams can exploit that. But I think for the majority of the game, the rules work really well. But it is a tough one, because teams do exploit it and use that to their advantage. But when you try and use that a little bit too far, you a lot of the time you end up with one in the bin. So it's a really thin line, and I don't know, Lodz. It's quite hard to explain, and it is pretty hard. But at the moment, I think the rules are working as good as they can.
Well, Gutho, I'm sure you've had no prouder moment than Clarkie giving you an 8.5 out of 10.
8.5.
I'll be walking around very, very happy today.
Yeah. Well, Gutho, what would you give yourself? What did you say earlier? 7.
No, he said this morning a 7. He might be having a bad morning. Wait till this afternoon. He'll get himself up to an 8.
I might leave my shirt off for the first.
Go, you 8.5.
Thanks for your time, mate. Go well against the Tigers.
Appreciate it.
On the text line. Thanks, Chicken, by the way. Laurie.
Call any time, Chicken.
Yeah.
Laurie, thoughts on Whiten for 17 and move Talakai to 18, so out of the 17. Adam from Canberra asked that one. You were speaking earlier about the versatility that Talakai gives.
Yeah, just the fact that Talakai's played in the middle and he's played in the edge as an edge back rower. He's done it for a while. He'd be able to handle it better than Jack if he had to do it for a long period. Jack could do it for a 10-15 minute stint. And, you know, Origin, because it's so fast and so quick, unless you have experienced those positions before, you'll find yourself off the pace. And when I look back on game two, Jeremiah Nenai, he found the speed of that game too quick for him. Because you watch him defensively in that game, he was poor. And he was directly involved with New South Wales scoring two tries in that second half. One, he missed that tackle on Luai. And the other one, and I think it was Angus Crichton, scored under the post. They moved the ball to the right, and then they came back to the left. And Crichton went under the post. But Nenai was still stuck in his right edge position. He didn't close the space between him and Kafusi. And one thing you talk about in Origin is when the ball goes past you, that's when you're at your most vulnerable, because if they turn it back on the inside and you haven't shut down that space, you get found out. So you've got to keep moving. You can't plant your feet and then all of a sudden realize the threat's coming and then start to go, because you're always a half a meter behind. And the gap between Kafusi and where Nenai should have closed it was massive. And he was directly, directly in the position that you didn't want him to be in. He needed to close that space down, but he wasn't able to because he was fatigued. So if you were to put a Jack Whiten in, and if New South Wales happened to get an injury to their forwards early in the game to leave them one player short or one middle short or one forward short on that interchange bench, and Jack had to play a long stint there, I'd be worried that he'd be able to do that effectively. I just think he'd be found out. If you didn't have Cookie there as your 14, Jack would be ideal. But when you got Cookie there as well, and Jack, I think they'd be too light on.
England are 3 for 259, chasing 378 for victory in the test against India at Edgbaston. In the tennis overnight, Nick Kyrgios through to his third Grand Slam quarterfinal with a five-set victory over Brandon Nakashima. And he'll be joined in the last eight, at least in the women's, by Alia Tomjanovic, who won in three sets against Elise Cornet. Unfortunately, Alex Demonor was defeated in five sets, and Jason Kubler went down in straight sets against Taylor Fritz, the American. We've got Caden Neville, Wallabies lock, coming up shortly, and Darcy Swain faces the judiciary tonight after he was red-carded for that tap. I refuse to call it a headbutt, a tap against the provocative Englishman Johnny Hill on the weekend. So we'll see how that plays out, but he's unlikely to be let off given the state of the suspensions given by World Rugby these days. So I would say he'll be missing, but also set to be missing this week is, well, Quade Cooper, unlikely to be back after he was injured in the warm-up ahead of that game last Saturday night. And there'll be no Alan Alaalatoa as well. But Caden Neville, great story. Only started playing rugby at the age of 21. A couple of years later, he was in a Wallaby squad, but didn't make his Wallabies debut until 10 years later. And that was last weekend at 33 years of age. So we'll speak to Caden Neville, the Wallabies lock, shortly. Just further news on a couple of the jockeys who unfortunately suffered those serious falls. And we heard from Adam Pengilly earlier. I just saw a tweet put out by Racing New South Wales as well on the condition of Alyssa Meredith as well. And this was about three quarters of an hour ago. And they're saying that Alyssa has two contusions on her brain, but no swelling or bleed. She has been moved to ICU to monitor, keeping her intubated and in an induced coma for now. No other injury. So that's the report on Alyssa Meredith. And late yesterday, there was some further news on Leah Kilner as well and her condition after her fall at Grafton. And, well, there was some improving news there as well. And, well, she momentarily came out of her coma and squeezed her mum's hand. And then she was put back in her coma as apparently panic can set in. So they'll bring Leah Kilner out of sedation for short periods over the next few days. But there is some encouragement there, but still a long road ahead. So certainly thoughts and prayers with those two jockeys, Leah Kilner and Alyssa Meredith. And of course their families as well. A very, very stressful couple of days for them. Time to talk some rugby and the Wallabies. Well, they'll recognise NAIDOC week this week. They're going to wear the First Nations jersey and they're going to sing the national anthem in the local dialect as well against England on Saturday night in Brisbane. So a great nod from the Wallabies to NAIDOC week and, of course, our Indigenous culture. And joining us now, fresh from his Test debut last weekend at the age of 33, as I mentioned, 10 years after he was first picked in a Wallabies extended squad, he got the chance to wear the gold jumper last weekend. Caden Neville joining us. Caden, good morning to you.
How you going?
Yeah, good, thanks. Nice to have you on the show. And I guess considering your unique story and the fact you only started playing rugby at the age of 21, I mean, how satisfying was Saturday night? And also to get the win under adverse circumstances as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, the win was probably the focus that I tried to remain on during the week, but yeah, it's good to soak up the occasion personally as well after.
Any nerves, Caden?
Yeah, a little bit, but he's probably got a bit of a problem if there isn't. So yeah,
good point.
Sort of need those nerves to play a big occasion like that.
What about, mate, the fact that you, I guess, a little bit older, a little bit more mature, do you think that helped you, or was that feeling of making your debut still, I guess, exactly what it would have been like if you were, you know, 10 years younger?
Well, it was probably a bit of both. Like, it's probably a nagging part of your brain that thinks you're playing a new level and you might get exposed. But at the same time, you've played a lot of big games or games that were big to me anyway, and just got to trust that your preparation, everything, you're going to go out there and do the job that you're planning to do.
And, Caden, what adjustments and I guess responsibility fell on you when Darcy Swain was red carded?
Probably the obvious one was he calls the line out. And until Matt Phillip was able to come on in the second half, I had to sort of take charge of that. But it was really only two that we had, and one of them we just used a bit of a trick play that we just before half time when we got the 3 points. So it worked out all right in the end.
What were you most impressed about with your own performance, Caden, but also the team's performance? What did the coaching staff have to say to you after the game?
I reckon the main thing was just the resilience of the group. I didn't feel it myself and didn't sense it within the group. Anyone feeling rattled or defeated by the sort of mounting challenges that get coming. So that's an awesome position to be in, especially if we can play a few games now where things go our way.
Yeah, not only did you have some challenges during the game, but you also had the challenge before the game when Quade Cooper was ruled out. When did you actually know that he was going to miss the game and Noah was going to start?
I think it was pretty much just as we were walking off the warm-up. So, right. Yeah, that just gave us a 5-second chat saying Noah's in. We gave Noah a big pat on the back because play with him with the bumpies anyway. So let's go.
Caden, just how niggly were the English? I mean, watching the game, I mean, that Johnny Hill looks like an absolute pest, pulling hair. You know, he was smacking Darcy Swain in the face as well, so I can understand why Darcy got a bit frustrated. But how niggly were they across the board?
Yeah, I didn't seem to cop as much as Darcy, but there's a bit of jersey tugging and pushing and that sort of thing. So we'll see how much that continues this weekend and how we'll deal with it.
What areas is Dave Rennie focused on that you need to address this week?
I think in sort of all areas of contact, we want to be better still. Like, I mean, we did win, but we didn't knock them back in the tackle as much as we'd like to. And in the breakdown and even our carries, even though there was some good stuff, we want to sort of, on average, bring it all up.
You've also got Dan McKellar, obviously, as part of the Wallabies setup. You've dealt with him at the Brumbies as well. In your little dealings with Dave Rennie, how are they similar? How are they different? And, you know, why do they complement each other well?
Oh, probably a difficult question to answer real quick. They're definitely different characters and different ways of operating, but this is they do seem to complement each other really well now. Instead of had a little bit of a look before Dan was in here 2 years ago, and now that he's in here and seem to bounce off each other well, particularly with Dan taking over all aspects of forward stuff.
And just on a personal level, mate, I'm sure you've had a lot of well wishes in the last 7 days and family and friends and a lot of contact. I'm sure it's created probably ticket problems for you now as well. Everyone wants a ticket, but I mean, how's it been just trying to, I guess, focus on your job at hand and also receiving, I'm sure, a lot of phone calls from a lot of people who want to wish you the best?
Yeah, it's nice. Try not to spend all day looking at the stuff. Just give yourself a little bit of time to get through it here and there, but it's much better to be dealing with congratulations rather than just good lucks all week. So see if we can get some more of them this week.
Caden, how did you go from a rower to a rugby union player? Why did you change from that sport into rugby union?
Well, I guess I'd grown up playing rugby league at sort of park level, and then through my high school years and just after, I was doing rowing at a full-time sort of commitment level. And I guess the changes that did to my body when then I played league again, I thought, hang on, I could probably play this a bit better than I thought. But I guess I saw the league pathway at the time was a little bit shut, and I just rolled down to Manly and started playing union and just sort of sensed I could give it a good nudge.
And this week, Caden, a real nod to our Indigenous culture and the fact you're going to be singing the national anthem in the local dialect. Has everyone learnt it yet? And how are you going to attack that?
Yeah, we're getting there. We started learning about probably in the first week of camp, actually. And from the Eora dialect last time, they said this one's a little bit more complicated. So we're knocking it off line by line, and hopefully we've got it dialed in by the weekend.
Well, it's a great initiative by the team, and I'm sure we'll get a great atmosphere there at Suncorp on Saturday night and hopefully go 2-0 up against the English, mate. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Cool, no worries. Good to talk to you.
Caden Neville there, Wallabies lock. Great story. And awesome story. Can't believe he only started playing rugby at 21.
It's so good. I don't think we speak enough about stories like that. The dream for everyone is you feel like you've got to take every single stepping stone from 10 years of age to make it to the highest level, which is 100% incorrect. You see people start late. You see people get dropped and have, you know, 5, 6, 7 years out of their sport, and they still find a way back. And that's hard work, dedication, and making the most of your opportunity. So, again, for Caden, just an amazing story. For any rugby player out there, guys playing club rugby now thinking they're so far away from playing for the Wallabies, you're one good game, you're two good games. Yeah, a lot of hard work, but it is actually so close.
Don't know how much you saw of the game last week, Loz, but I think we've solved our fullback problem. I think Andrew Kellaway has the potential to be a fullback for Australia for a period of time. It's his natural position anyway, and I know you're a big fan of Jordan Bataille, but fullback's not his natural position, and he had some good touches as well. I think Kellaway can fill that void at the back.
Well, fingers crossed he can, Mido. Ugly injury to Tom Banks, wasn't it, when he left the field? That was a terrible break. But Kellaway, you know, he's been a real find for Australian rugby too, hasn't he, the last couple of years? He's just jumped out of the ground. Got a run a couple of years ago on the wing and sort of hasn't looked back and got moved there last weekend. And hopefully he'll, you know, if he starts there this week, he can do as good a job, if not better, than what he did. But Australian rugby, they should, and the Wallabies, should take a lot of confidence out of that performance against England. I mean, when you're a man down, it's always tough to, you know, for a long period of time too in that game. They had to hang on, but not just hang on. They actually were the dominant team. I know England came back towards the end, but it never really looked like Australia were going to lose that contest. So I think they take great confidence into Suncorp Stadium. It's a terrific venue for the Aussie teams. England will struggle up there, and the Wallabies, this is a good period for them under Dave Rennie, and let's hope they can continue on this weekend and have a good victory up there, because that'll set themselves up heading into a World Cup next year.
And the market we tab, the Wallabies $1.62, England $2.25, and plus 3.5 at the line, England, for that game at Suncorp Saturday night. So Brad Davison coming up shortly. Loz, you've got a community footy event on.
Big weekend for the Eden Tigers, Mido. So this weekend, they're celebrating Heritage Round, and it also marks a special anniversary for the Eden Tigers with their wins in 1982, 1992, and 2002. And it starts on Friday night. They kick off with a dinner and a catch-up at the Fig Cafe and Bar. Then Saturday, the games will be played at the original Oval, the Barclay Street Oval. And I don't know what happens here, but Hippie Corner is making a comeback.
Watch it go.
Yeah. The day starts, 4 games of footy. It starts with the under-18s and first grade kickoff at 3 p.m. against Tathra. And following the game, they've got anniversary celebrations of the premiership winning teams in the pavilion along with the jersey auctions. And then on Sunday, you can enjoy a round of bowls at the Eden Sports and Recreation Club. So that's a big weekend. If you're down the South Coast or down in Eden, go along for that weekend. I'm sure you'll meet up with a lot of old friends.
So what's that? Group 16, Eden?
You're turning up dusty to work Monday by the sounds of that.
I'll tell you what, that's a big weekend, boys.
Yeah, huge.
Drunk bowls, that's a nasty way to finish your Sunday.
Yes, it is.
End to end.
7 at each end.
Mate, you're dusty on Monday morning.
Just having a look at Group 16 at the moment. The Bombala Blue Heelers, top of the table, from Tathra and Bega and Eden the 4th. Oh, yeah, Bateman's Bay, Marimbula. These are all your old holiday destinations for, well, everyone who lives in Canberra. This is where they go for holidays,
South
isn't
Coast,
it,
South Coast, mate. That's where they all head down to. That's a good weekend. So if you're down there in Eden or around, or if you've had anything to do with the Eden Tigers, get down there for the celebrations this weekend.
Good stuff. Brad Davidson, morning to you.
Yeah, morning, guys. How are we?
Yeah, very well, thanks, mate. We've had a difficult couple of days with some really bad falls, and Leah Kilner and Alyssa Meredith just had some slightly positive reports, I guess, in the last, 12 hours or so?
Yeah, you're right, Jared. It's been a really tough couple of days, hasn't it? And I think for a lot of people in the racing industry, the first thing they think of when they wake up now is these these two young jockeys and how they're coping. And you know, we had an update from trainer Rob Heathcote last night on the condition of Leah Kilner, and there was some positive news there. You know, everyone's feared the worst there, and look, there's still a long recovery ahead, no doubt, but Rob was saying he'd just spoken to Leah's mum and gave the good news that her daughter did momentarily come out of her coma. She was asked to squeeze her mum's hand, and she did, and the medicos then put her back under as panic can set in those situations. So they'll bring her out of sedation for short periods over the next few days, but you know, some good signs there. So fingers crossed we can hear some more good news there. And, of course, Alyssa Meredith fell there at Gunnedah on Monday. And the update from Racing New South Wales there last night was that she arrived at John Hunter Hospital. She's in an induced coma and currently undergoing CT scans. So our thoughts continue to be with both jockeys in these tough times and their families, of course. And, just another reminder of what our jockeys go through on the track each day.
Do you think we race this weekend, Davo, with all the rain around? And obviously, you know, Warwick Farm will have to be in some sort of doubt, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be, Loz. I spoke to Mark Jones yesterday afternoon, and they copped 36 mil yesterday afternoon. And you're sort of thinking, oh, they're going to be in a bit of trouble then. And then having a look at the report this morning, it looks like they've copped 110 mil in the last 24 hours. So it's just, where I was on the Central Coast, it just rained and rained and rained all night. So, obviously it's done the same at Warwick Farm. So, look, I think they're going to be in a lot of doubt for tomorrow. I know reading a story by Ray Thomas with Chief Steward Mark Van Gestel suggesting that, you know, they're looking at Canterbury and Kensington. Canterbury had surface water yesterday. Kensington was very heavy. So I'm assuming those places would have copped a fair bit of rain overnight as well. So I'm sure we'll hear more today whether tomorrow's a viable option, whether they might try to push back a day. I'm not sure. I know that Kembla's down for later this week and they're highly doubtful as well. So, yes, just one of those situations, guys. As for the weekend, I think it's going to depend a lot on the next sort of 3 or 4 days and what the lead up, if we can get a break in the weather for a few days. These Sydney tracks, you know, that they are racing heavy, of course, with all the rain, but hopefully they can improve that a little bit to get back on for the weekend. But yep, it's just the big wet, and you know, hopefully everyone across New South Wales is staying safe at the moment. Scary times again, and you know, that's the most important thing.
Looking forward to seeing Incentivise back at the races, Stavo, the Caulfield Cup winner from last year. But what is his likely target in the spring?
Yeah, I heard I read an interview there yesterday with one of the part owners, Bray Sikolsky, there, and suggesting the Cox Plate is going to be the main aim for the spring. We didn't rule out another crack at the Melbourne Cup, so if they can get in with a winnable weight there, they might have a look at that. But all systems towards the Cox Plate. But I think Bray made a good point that, you know, we need a horse like him to come back and be there for the spring. You know, we've lost some headline acts for the spring already, Hatsotsu and a few others, no doubt. So hopefully he can come back and make a successful return. And, all systems go towards the Cox Plate, but not ruled out of the Melbourne Cup at this stage.
Of course, we had a rain-interrupted or a weather-interrupted day there at Rosehill on Saturday. But did you find anything to follow out of the meeting?
Yeah, I struggled to find anything out of Rosehill because if you're on the fence, then that was the place to be. And if you weren't on the fence, I think there was one place getter in the first five races that wasn't on the fence and the rest were. So I've gone back to Randwick Kensington on Wednesday and found a horse there, Speed Legend, who I think looks ready to win now, third up from a break. Really like the way hit the line, second up. I think out to a mile next time out will be hard to beat. So we'll make it the horse to follow. You could throw in Airman there as well. A super impressive debut and should be hard to beat wherever it goes next start.
So therefore you're forgiving plenty there at Rosehill on Saturday, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't too many that sat off the fence and were in the finish or close to the finish, but I just think you've got to be forgiving. It seemed to really be a massive advantage to be on the fence there on the weekend. So I want to be forgiving of anything that wasn't on the fence, and probably a little bit just have to bring those horses back that were on the fence. You know, there were a couple of roughies at 1:40s and whatnot, but like I said, I think that was such a big advantage that you've got to be a little bit careful as well, sort of backing those the next time. You've got to bring them back a little bit off those performances.
Okay, mate. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks, guys.
And Lozza, just on the text line here, Laurie, the 1982 Eden side most probably included a very young Peter Kelly, who more than held his own against the men, as well as his brothers. A tough side, says Desi. And another one here says, Peter Kelly, an Eden boy. I was ball boy. 1982 for Eden. Got paid $4 and a pie and Coke each game. Russell Fairfax was playing for the Snowy River Bears at the time. So there you go.
There you go. A couple of great players. Peter Kelly won a couple of premierships with the Bulldogs and regarded as one of the toughest front rowers that ever played the game. And Russell Fairfax, wow, what a player he was for the Roosters. You know, fullback, chiming into the back line, scoring plenty of spectacular tries. So, yeah, it's good to reminisce about all those old times, Middo, and I'm sure the Eden Tigers this weekend will have plenty to reminisce about.